Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Griese from College Park, Maryland today, and this is the UR Tennis Network. This is another week of American Tennis, and we need you to stand up and to speak out. And Edmund Burke always say, all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. We want you to bring your viewpoints forward. All that we ask is that you stay professional, address issues, and not people, and no one can ever find fault. Let's get to a deeper level. Instead of being on the surface all the time in cliches and facts, let's go down to opinions, feelings, and needs, and let's get some great stuff done. This is the UR Tennis Network. You can call in today if you'd like to talk to one of our guests at area code 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. You can get my blogs and all the past shows. Go to chuckcreasy.net. And also my 38th tennis camp will be coming up this summer, the Total Tennis Training Camps that I started in 1976. My first summer Total Tennis Training Camps, 37th summer, I believe, coming up. And chuckcreasy.net also has that information. Also, if you want some of my videos or some of my lectures, different things that I'm doing, go to t3mentorship.com, t3mentorship. I'd like to thank Alex Slezak up there in Pittsburgh for helping me get that set up. But this is the UR Tennis Network, American Tennis. And where we have been into the grassroots campaign the last 4 weeks, trying to figure out how to get more people locked in, not just fishing with barbless hooks where we introduce people to tennis, but get people hooked on the game. Henry Coe is one of the best people I've ever met at working in community tennis. And Henry's our first guest. He's going to talk here a few minutes about a program that he works through. Lynn Morrell up in Baltimore started this program many years ago when her husband was ill. It's called Kids Play for Good. Henry is sponsoring and putting on a 10 and under play day here at the College Tennis Center of College Park in College Park, Maryland. It's this Sunday, correct, Henry? This Sunday coming up?
Yep, you're right, Chuck.
Okay, well, Henry, again, this is the third week on here. I'm hoping we're getting a lot of sign-ups. I know my three children will be here. My wife said she definitely wants them to participate. But it's a fundraiser for – you go ahead and talk about it. It's your program. We want you to talk about it, and we want as many people to come out as they can.
Sure. So the fundraiser is for the Children's Inn at NIH, which is located in Bethesda. And what the Children's Inn does is that it houses really sick kids from all over the world for free at their facility while they get treated at the National Institutes of Health down the road. And the idea is that the inn fosters like a like home environment that these kids miss out on. You know, these kids, you know, sometimes they don't get the chance to like play an instrument or play sports like tennis because they're that sick. And I've been coaching kids for 3 or 4 years, and I just think it's heartbreaking that some kids don't even have the chance to pick up a racket.
Well, Henry, the people can sign up to either give a donation for the NIH program there and help these children out, or they can sign up. It's $20, I think, is the entry for this week's program. Is that correct? And they can go ahead.
So you can sign up at kidsplayforgood.org and clicking on the featured ambassador or causes tab, it'll direct you to my own personal page and where there'll be links. You can sign up to donate or register. It's not too late to sign up. You know, bring your friends, tell everyone you know. So all ability levels are welcome. We'll provide loaner rackets, you know, for those who don't own them. And it's going to be a lot of fun. There'll be prizes and it'll be awesome.
And it's 1 o'clock it's 2 o'clock this Sunday, April 21st at College Park, Tennis Center College Park on Paint Branch Parkway. And Henry, listen, I just had a brainstorm here. You know, these websites are really taking off. It's just amazing. You know, one of the girls I coached a couple years ago even signed me up for this Facebook thing. And, you know, I'm telling you, Henry, how bad I am. They didn't even have Xerox machines when I first went to college. And so I'm even on that Facebook. But I was thinking, I think that we could get my Facebook thing. I think we could get the, what is the other one for the guy in Marietta, Georgia does? It's the We Coach Tennis site. And call me later today. I think we ought to call and at least ask people for donations for the NIH program. And we ought to be able to get some donations. So, folks, you can donate $10, $15, $100, $1,000, anything that you feel compelled to do. But I wanted to say that this Kids Play for Good program, Lynn Morrell helped started this, I think it's some 10 years ago. And basically it's an ambassadorship. You get people like yourself, Henry, who participate in the program and then work with young kids. And then you go off and you start your own enterprising, fundraising events to help charities and things like this. And what a great, great training ground that you get while you are there at the University of Maryland. And did you cut class again, man?
No, I'm off class right now.
You're off. Okay, now come on, man. You told me you love getting out of that thermodynamics class or whatever you had here in. But, Henry, okay, well, listen, folks, again, kidsplayforgood.org this week at College Park, and come on out and support these children. And we have a lot of our young kids. We have a three-tier mentorship program here, folks, where everybody has a teacher, everybody has a student, and everybody has a peer group that holds each other accountable. But part of the things that our kids are doing, they're assisting the coaches here and working with kids, and they learn to teach, and through teaching they learn how to play better and they learn how to love the sport better. So, hey, listen, Henry, thank you very much for being on, and anything else you want to say real quick?
Yeah, I just want to thank the Tennis Center at College Park for donating the courts and the volunteers on Sunday, because that's a huge part of the fundraiser, and it wouldn't have happened without them. I want to thank AJ at the Tennis Center of the College Park, USTA Maryland, USTA National for publicizing my event. And I also want to thank you, Chuck, for getting me on to American Tennis and letting me have the opportunity to do some airtime to promote my my fundraiser.
Anytime and every time. I respect so much what you're doing. And Ray Benson is wonderful here as our CEO. He allows people to run with the ball, and he doesn't micromanage. I love bottom-up management. I'm going to get on this USDA guy here that we have. Kent Kinnear, are you on the line yet?
I am.
You are on the line.
I am. Can you hear me, Coach?
So Henry?
Yep.
Yep, I can hear you. But Kent Kinnear with USDA, Henry, this is a guy that we're going to hold his feet to the fire here in the next 50 minutes. So, Henry, thank you for being on. We really appreciate it.
Thanks,
God bless you, and thank you for the work you do. All right, folks, and that's Henry Cohen. Again, Kids Play for Good. Thank you, Lynn Morrell, for everything you do. And this is what we love is the grassroots programs. Innovation starts at the bottom and comes up, there, Coach Kinnear. And I wanted to thank you, first of all, for being on the show today. There are a few people that I respect more in life and also as in the sports world and then definitely in tennis. And, Kent, I don't know where to get started here, man. Should we tell some old war stories? I've got so much stuff on you. And, by the way, I think I could handicap you. Everybody out there thinks that you're this guy that is the greatest guy in the world and everything. But anytime I see those USPA people, you know, I have secret ammunition. You know that, don't you?
Well, we've spent a lot of time together, and I was just telling someone the other day how deeply you've impacted my life, Coach. And I know just hearing you tell about all the years of camps that you've run, the 37 years or whatever it is, and I know all the players that you've coached on teams over the years, and I just know what an incredible impact you've had on so many lives. So we do have a lot of stories, a lot of great memories, and as you said, we've, along with my teammates that played at Clemson with me on your teams, you know, went through a lot, shared a lot of emotions, and that's why to this day we're so close. So, I wanted to start out just thanking you so much for the impact you've had and continue to have on people's lives.
Well, thank you, Ken. You know, I always believe that there is no motion without emotion, folks. You have to put some fire in the tank, and I would always rather. I just came off the court, Ken. I got a coaching buzz going on. Literally, I get goosebumps. It goes right sometimes. But I got this wild child out there. I call him the Hurricane. And this boy has some talent, like unbelievable. But it's like, Ken, I always tell people I'd rather try to tame a roaring tiger than inspire a timid pussycat. And these kids who are on the fringe and these outlier kids really end up being great because they see so many things, you know. And this kid's not afraid. He's been in trouble so much over his lifetime that he's not afraid of missing. He's not afraid of hitting the ball under pressure. And it's sort of like he does right things instead of getting him to do things right is a challenge. But anyhow, Kent Kinnear, 35 Grand Slam events you have played in and doubles. An All-American, of course, and I've got to say the most clutch player that I have ever coached, you and Rick Rudine. Two of the most clutch players. Now, Berger will claim that he was clutch, but Kent, you were really clutch. And we're doing a book on Clemson Athletics right now, and I had to write your story the other day, Kinnear, and I had to go back. I have four stories, whether it's Peter Smith at USC, and man, we'll get this on the air. What was he up? 6-0 in the tiebreaker in the third set against you when we played Long Beach State, and you pulled that one out. We're playing Tennessee. You're down 6-0, 3-0. I go onto the court, and I said, well, you either keep doing your fundamentals or you bail out. And you turn that match. I can remember you and your partner, Ben Van Gelderen, becoming All-Americans, beating the number one seeds at the NCAA tournament. You're down 6-0. 2-1, it's sort of the same thing. I told you guys both play back, just hit the ball through the middle or something basic, but definitely the most clutch person. And I want to talk about being clutch here in a few minutes. But I'm giving you your accolades, but Kent, more than anything else, as you go through life, the ultimate compliment that I could ever get is that and I'm going to give you this, is that you are a noble man and a good man and dependable, reliable, and your word stands for everything. And, you know, so we're going to be right back with Kent Kinnear, who is the Director of Talent Player Identification and Development. I used to call it the talent scout for USPA or something. But,
yeah, we took talent out of it. It's player ID and development.
Oh, come on, man. What is that? You know, we got to be able to call it for what it is. You know, my show is not going to be the most politically correct. I want to get that straight first, right? You know that,
yep.
Don't you? Okay,
I
well,
do.
You better put on the flak jacket, you know, because I'm going
right.
to say it is. I promise not to pin you to the wall too much, but folks, American Tennis, area code 714-583-6853. We'll be right back with Kent Kinnear.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Identification and Development with USTA, and we're great. Thank you to be on the line. By the way, Vesa Panka said to say hello, Kent. Talk about
right.
a noble man. Yeah, and Kent, here's the deal. You know, I always start out with Edmund Burke, all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing, but, you know, my mother, I don't know if you ever met my mother, but my mommy used to say, Kent, that you did. Well, you know, she passed away in the mid-80s, but I can remember her voice to this day with her loaded language. But she used to say, a squeaky wheel gets the oil, but if it squeaks too loud, it gets removed. Kent, you know, right now the USTA has been going through a, I think, a great evolutionary period because they're absolutely, they are listening. It's not like they're being pompous and sort of, hey, we know what's going on, you folks don't. I love the listening tour that went on with Dave Haggerty. I love going down into the meetings that I've been. It's like everybody, the ideas are out there on the table. It's like people, maybe they have, you know, some things they don't want to talk about, but for the most part, people are getting to talk, and I like the atmosphere, first of all. Now, Kent, what's your take on this thing? Do you feel like the USTA is moving forward in a direction it needs to be right now?
Oh, I definitely do. I mean, I think, from my perspective, and like in our department, we do a lot of the regional training centers, the camps that go on across the country. And last year alone, we had over 1,000 kids go through an RTC camp. We had over 300 coaches who helped out. And I just did a camp this last weekend in Atlanta, working with 8 coaches from the section, and we worked together, shared ideas, and it was a great team effort. Looking at 24 kids that have been recommended by the coaches' commissions in the sections, and I just see a lot of networking and collaboration across the country, and really trying to build the base of the young kids. Now, these camps are ages 8 to 13. This particular camp was 10 and 11 year olds, but I just really, from our perspective, we want to get the, we had over 60 camps last year. We want to have the camps, get to know the coaches, get to know the players, the parents, get information out, and really try to build the base of players coming up. And we like to call it growing the family. And I just really believe, that's the key to this country's success is working together like that across the country and networking and kind of all hands on deck and working together on this whole thing. So, I totally believe it's moving in the right direction, and I'm very excited about the future.
Vess is one of the best managers people I've ever seen. I mean, I'll be leaving here in June and going back to South Carolina. We're just going to find a little bit slower track of land where we can raise our children and go a little bit slower in life. But this has been a fantastic place to work for a couple reasons. Ray allows us to work. And then Vessa is about the best manager of people I've ever seen. I'm a number one guy. Frank Salazar is a number one guy. Vessa's a number one guy. And we all share the same office. But everybody gives each other space and respects each mm-hmm. other's job. But, the thing that I wanted to say is it's a cooperative environment. However, each person is independent to go out and do their thing. Now, I wanted to make that point because I'm not a person – I don't like this socialist mentality of cooperative education or sitting 6 kids at the same desk and, we are a village first and all this stuff, because what we're doing is we're crippling those outliers or those innovators that should be leaders. So, but at the same time, like I'm saying, what Vessa has done here, he's allowed everybody to be a leader, and he gives you the department and says, take the hill. I'm not going to tell you how to take the hill. Get the work done. We'll hold you accountable. But he empowers. He empowers. He does not micromanage or say it's got to be my way. And it's been a joy to work for him and for the work here under Ray because of that. And, Kent, you feel that way at the UST. I might be giving you a little bit of, do you understand where I'm coming from here? This is the key. You have to have cooperation, but we don't want people that are just part of the pack. We want people who are independent and free thinkers as well.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. I look at College Park. I mean, what a incredible program and one of one that we've partnered with from a regional training center standpoint. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I think that program sent 35 players to Easter Bowl and obviously have had tremendous success and. For a number of years now, and I think they have 35 in the top 50 in the country, and that's twice as many as from a year ago at this time. So obviously they're doing so many great things, and we really value our partnerships, and we learn from them. We try to be as big a resource as we can to them as well, but absolutely they're in the trenches and doing some great work, as are a number of other programs, the regional training centers that we have that we're really excited to be working hard with. So. I totally see what you're saying and agree that to have that individuality and to be able to, as you said, climb, however it was, conquer that hill on your own or whatever, we certainly are always looking for people to partner with, but also people to learn from and to see what the best way to get things done are. And we try to get that word out to share great ideas with people, but certainly don't want to act like we're telling people how to do things, so.
No, I'm big with loaded language. I wanted to say, first of all, Vessa has said 3 brilliant diamonds. These are great diamonds that he's given. He told us in a meeting about a year ago, he said, it's not about a system, guys. It's about relationships. He says, people don't care what you know unless they know that you care, which, you know, is a great line. But it's about relationships, and you must earn trust, and you must earn respect. It has nothing to do with the player liking you. They like you at the end if they get down the road and they say, oh, wow, I see what you mean. But the respect and the trust. And the key to power is empowering people under you. It is not cutting the legs off from people. The strength, the key to power is empowering those under you. Power should be implied, not exhibited. Can't talk real quick, though, about your job there and what you're doing so people can know exactly what you do. You say 60 camps a year you're running?
Yeah, we have, as I mentioned, we have 17 regional training centers across the country. And at those sites, we run 60-plus camps a year, and they're for ages 8 to 13. We had over 1,000 kids go through last year, as I mentioned. And, again, it is, I couldn't agree more. It's about relationships. And I was saying that Saturday to a group of parents that I was talking to. That's one of the big objectives of the camps that we do is building those relationships and sharing information and seeing the kids play and having fun but working hard. One of our themes is Outwork the World. And we really just want to try to share ideas and see the kids. We take the dartfish video so they can have some videos that they can look at and see their technical foundation, and their primary coaches at home can use that as a tool as well. And we offer some feedback. But that's pretty much half of what the camps are. Pretty much half of what our department does. The other half is the relationships with the 17 regional training centers that we do have, and just, again, trying to be as big a resource as we can, try to provide opportunities, and really work together on building this base of players that are coming up for the U.S. tennis.
Well, I like something you said. You said you bring the coaches in, you bring the kids' coaches in, and you work with them as well, and you let them be a big part of it. Is that correct?
We have 8 coaches that work the camps from the section. Some of them are coaches of the kids. All the primary coaches of the kids that come to the camp are invited to the camps and are invited to be on court or listen to all the presentations or the talks that we have or just the coaches' dialogues that we have, the discussions. But then also, within 2 weeks after every camp is finished, they get a link via email to the Dartfish video, the media page for their player, and on that, not only is there video in that, but then there's also a little attachment of some things like 2 areas of focus that we would recommend for the player. So it's basically feedback from what we see at the camp. So if the coaches weren't actually at the camp, they get that via email.
Yeah, that's huge, Ken. For the years since 1987 or whatever, then when they start 86, I think they started the player development, and the USTA started. And I don't want to say becoming a bureaucracy. You know, I heard the greatest example of what a bureaucracy is, our government, our university. I saw our university become a bureaucracy. And, you know, what happens, the guy said, you got a great house. It was built in about the 60s, and then you add a room on, and then another room, and then a hallway, and then another room and another room before. And then you need a screwdriver. You've got to go through 13 rooms, 2 bathrooms, and 3 bedrooms to get a screwdriver. And it's like that's what happens in bureaucracies, because most of the time you don't cut, like our government, of course, does not cut departments once they take on the department. You can see that with the sequester thing that was going on. People panic when you start saying, wait a minute, it's done its job, it's done. No, they let it hang in there. But the trust thing, what I wanted to say, Kent, is honoring the coach who's worked with the kid. Your coach was the great Steve Bierman, who was a man of few words, who basically worked with kids in that YMCA center in his place up there in Muncie, Indiana. And he was as good a man as there is and noble as there was. But you've got to keep the Steve Biermans in the loop, don't you?
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. And that's one thing that we really we try to do through this camp process and through getting out to the sections and including coaches' commissions from the sections on every step of the process. And absolutely, there's so many great coaches out there, and the, you know, one of the funnest things about doing these camps is the time with the coaches and just sharing ideas and what they're learning, and how to be better teachers and how to be better coaches. And that's one of the best parts of the job, So absolutely, they need to be included and valued and get, you know, get information so that we all get better.
Well,
from
trust
them.
Only comes from giving up a little bit of power, you know. And hey, do you ever see the movie years ago, Excalibur? Do you ever remember
that
movie?
No.
Okay, I love movies, but Ken, I remember the most dramatic scene I ever saw was King Arthur, and they were fighting this big battle out in the moat, and finally he had the sword at the other guy's neck, and he was ready, and he said, "Now submit and give allegiance to your king." He said, and that was him. He was just become the king. He was a boy king, and the guy said, "Go ahead and kill me." He says, "You're not a king. You're not even a knight." And so King Arthur goes, "Wow, you're right." He kneeled down in the water, gave the guy he had just captured his sword, and he said, "Oh, you go ahead and knight me." And the guy had looked like he's going to take his head off, and he said, "Oh, such courage I have never seen. By God and everything that I know, I knight you, you know, Sir Arthur," you know. And the most powerful thing in that movie was the submission there. So, I mean, this is the simple thing, Ken, and I know you know this in your heart of hearts, but I'm just so happy that, you know, the people down there are listening, because, you know, the key to power is empowering those under you. And once you empower people under you, the whole thing rises, you know. And so I'm so glad that you are empowering the coaches, and that the coaches have a big say-so in what's going on. And, of course, you have personal egos and stuff. But, all right, Ken, I want to ask you a couple questions real quick here before we go to commercial. But, Kent, I want to chew on these numbers here. We have 450,000 kids playing high school tennis, and less than 8%, I think the number is, play 5 tournaments or more a year. So, basically, they're maybe playing tennis, but they're not becoming tennis players. In other words, the hook is not, they're fishing with a barbless hook. High school tennis is looked at like a community activity. Now, 72% also of all professional athletes come out of our rural, not our urban, communities. Seems to me that USTA has been putting a lot of emphasis in urban training, and I think that the high schools are a sleeping giant right now. Community tennis is being paralyzed. Can you start off right now? Can we talk about that a few minutes before I have to go to a commercial? Just your quick thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I was at the annual meeting. I know that was discussed quite a bit, and I know you were there as well with the junior comp committee, and I thought those were really fascinating statistics, and you know, I spent a lot of time in rural Indiana, and I could totally see how, if we could get a bigger presence in some of those smaller communities, and what a great what a great sport for a lifetime, and what a great resource of great athletes, and there's just, you know, I think those statistics are fascinating, and I couldn't agree more. If we can do something to get more of those kids and those athletes into tennis, and not just playing maybe during the high school season, but throughout the year, that'd be a huge, huge plus for our sport.
Well, we want to talk about ways to do that. We've had the high school coaches on 3 of the last 4 weeks, and when we come right back after our commercial, Ken, I want to talk about some things and how we can do that, because that seems to me that that's our sleeping giant. We'll be right back with Ken Kinnear.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike Tennis Camps and take your game to the next level.
Coach Chuck Creasy back with American Tennis, and we have as our guest today Kent Kinnear, who's the director of player identification, and we're not saying the talent scout, right, Kent? I want to get this politically correct.
I figured you would like that. I know talent's kind of, there's a lot of talent out there, but it's a matter of work ethic and competitiveness and that kind of thing. So it's definitely more of a bigger package than just talent.
Yeah, well, for sure it is, for sure it is. But here's the thing, 72% of our athletes, top athletes, come from rural. The French Licks, Indiana, and the Beech Grove, Indianas, and the Muncie, Indianas, and the these small towns, Shelby, North Carolina, Tim Wilkinson, and the small towns, and it makes sense, Kent, because think about it, in the small towns, you know, if you've ever tried to promote a tennis tournament, you never try to do it in L.A. or New York or somewhere it's a big city. You try to do it in Montgomery, Alabama, or the Knoxville. Well, not even Knoxville, because they've got UT there. But you try to promote them in the small urban rural areas. But here's what we've done with the small towns. Two things. We've gone to class systems a lot. And, like, think about basketball, Indiana, how they've ruined Indiana basketball. I happen to take a lot of grief from a guy named Kyle Bailey here because he's from Kentucky, but he says, Coach, you know, you're from Indiana, but we got Kentucky won last year, Louisville this year. I said, well, they probably haven't started class systems yet. Think about it. With the class system, Larry Bird might not have ever come out of French Lick, Indiana. He probably would have had to play 1A ball. He would have got some participation trophies. People would have patted him on the back. But he would have never been able to go out against the big boys. And so we do a lot of things wrong. I had two high school coaches, Kent, on the last couple weeks, and here's what they said. Well, first of all, Chuck Waldron down in Clinton, South Carolina, he said, I have coached 103 kids to college scholarships, many more, almost 200 to college programs. And up until 5 years ago when they started the point system and rewarding points for tournaments, he says, now my kids have to travel so far that they don't even play tournaments. And he said, it's just crippled this program. Dan Vonk in Kingsland, Georgia, Camden County, Georgia, same thing. He says his tournaments, he'd have to drive all the way to Atlanta to play in Georgia tournaments. He said, the problems that they have with the structure of top-down management has crippled these high school programs from innovating and creating their own opportunities. Talk to me about this. What is the USTA aware that they may be crippling opportunities out there for kids in rural areas?
Well, I mean, I can't really say I'm an expert in that area. I know that our junior comp and the committee is talking about that, and they're the ones that put together the structure. And I know that it's complex. I know there's a lot of variables and components that go into the decisions that are made. So I don't know that I can, I can't really say that we're moving one way or another on that. And you may know more about that than I do, Coach, now that you're on that committee. But certainly we need to figure out ways to not cripple and ways to motivate and try to grow the number of players who are excited and passionate and a part of the system. And I know that's not an easy task across the board because there's challenges with everything, but I know a lot of people are working really hard on that. So my hope is that there's something here in the future that's going to definitely be a great tool to do that. What that is, I can't tell you, or what type of a system that is, but hopefully the great minds, including yourself, as you put time on that, will come up with that to help those situations out, especially with these rural kids that you're talking about, and these high school coaches who find parts of the system as being a little bit detrimental instead of promoting it. So sorry, I don't have the solution on that.
I'm hoping that I'm not the wheel that squeaks too loud and gets removed. You know me, I'm going to be doing my squeaking But in the end, it's not your ideas. It's the fact that other people need to embrace them. The cry and shame of tennis is that when people have been, sometimes we're blinded. You know, you wonder how people could stand for something that is so wrong for so long. And they're, you know, I've always tell the coaches this when, you know, I've worked with coaches. I'll tell them that there's a thing about tennis where we believe everyone in the world would want to be like me if only they knew how. And we all believe we have the answer. We have the way that it's done. And then we open our eyes, go, whoa, wait a minute. I didn't see that part of it. And this is a complex problem. I mean, this is our sleeping giant. And you're in charge of the talent search or the talent identification. And I would like to just say to you guys down there, let's figure out a way to get high school really, really on board, 450,000 kids. Here's my thought, Kent, and I want to get your thoughts, but I've always believed the format of college tennis is crummy. It basically, this dual match format in college, actually, if you don't get to play a lot of tournaments, is crummy. Because you always play, if you're number four guy on a team, you always play a number four player. Even if you're number one man, you always play a number one man, and that's not always good because you don't have the necessary ingredients to improve the matches below, the matches above, and then those matches that are your level. You know, so I brought up that the Texas High School Coaches Association has a great format. I think, wouldn't you agree, Kent, that Texas does pretty good at all their kids still playing high school tennis and stuff?
Mm-hmm. They have a great system in place, yeah.
Yeah, and this is Randy Blumendahl's idea for college at Indiana University. He wants a 10-week whatever you want to make the matches exciting for the public. Virgil Christian was on a couple weeks ago about college programs, and he said that, Kent, that you know, we got to get it on TV. We got to get exposure. And they're started their college match day programs and things. Well, you can do that in the fall, 10 weeks and piggyback football game weekends. Then the rest of the year should be player development. You have the Grand Slam of college tennis. You have clay courts, the indoors, the hard courts, and the All-Americans. It'll be four great Grand Slam events. Your satellite events would spring off of those. And the kids would play tournaments leading up to the summer. Then in June, they'd want to play all of the tournaments that you have set up now with the USTA, the futures and things, instead of being crippled going into the summer. After 5 months of pressure beyond belief, they would be able to go into the wrong kind of pressure, I want to say. But Randy Blumendahl has his solution, but he can't get in the air with those people. But, I think it's as easy as format. What else do you see about high school tennis we might be able to do? What thoughts?
Well, I mean, I I don't know if I have any answers to that. I know for me in my development, my high school years were meant an awful lot to me and a lot of great experiences being on the team. But I also was playing tournaments during the summer and some during the winter. I played basketball during the winter as well. But as far as the formats and things like that, I think those are some great and very interesting ideas, and I think some of those to see them play out would be really interesting, and especially some of those collegiate ideas. I don't know. I mean, they're pretty big changes. Don't know all the dynamics. Again, I think some of those things, it's a complex process, but anything that's going to help the development of those college kids is the way to go. And what exact the best system is, I don't know, but certainly to be able to play players that are better than you and maybe below you and your peers and that kind of balance of pressures and things like that are a great way for tournament scheduling. And if the school scheduling can somehow accomplish that, that would be a big plus, I think.
Yeah, the problem, a lot of the high schools, every high school association has their own deal. What I'm hoping for, Scott Schultz really is open to a lot of ideas. I'm going to try to get him to see if they will send out something to all the high schools and say, look, this would be a great format. We need more tournament play for your high schools. Maybe half the year they could play tournaments, you know. I mean, think about this. Mm-hmm. If they played their team matches in the fall, then the rest of the year they played tournaments, I mean, as a college coach, I'd go watch a high school tournament if they had eight different teams there just to sort of see who's going to break out of the pack there. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. You never go to a dual match to recruit. I mean, that's you just wouldn't do it at all. You know, so let me ask along those lines. Would you ever go to in your talent search or talent ID? Would you ever go to high school situation? When do you look for late bloomers? That's what I guess I'm asking you.
Yeah, I mean, what our department is mostly focused on is the 8 to 13 year olds. So, you know, that's before the high school ages. So I personally, you know, once they get beyond 13, it's a little bit outside our department and what we're running. But, you know, I haven't, when I first started as a national coach, I didn't get to, I don't think, any high school matches. It was mostly the national tournaments and some of the state sectional tournaments and things like that. So I can certainly see your point from a recruiting standpoint or something like that, to have a group of eight teams together as opposed to maybe just two teams dueling it out, you get a lot better look at a lot more players. So that would make sense to me.
Yeah, I think the key here is the difference between participation and performance. We have 450,000 kids participating, but they're not really into performance and development. And I think that maybe we brought this up a lot at those meetings, that, you know, probably up until about puberty, 12, 13, 14, participation should be the end all and the goal, but it should be performance very quickly after that, up until the kids mm-hmm. are 17, 18, 19. Vesa had a great take on it. He says he thinks that when he was on our show, he believes that we lose the kids at age about 15, 16, 17. They start gearing towards college instead of trying to go into pro tennis. And, you know, you could talk about that forever, I think, with your paradigm of the team you were on at Clemson. We had 12 guys and 8 guys played a little pro tennis. It's sort of like everybody was going to play pro tennis then, right?
Yeah, it was a little, you know, that was the exciting thing. It was there was a basic level of expectation. And, you know, when I was there, I know, you know, Mark Dixon was out and doing great things in the tour, Lawson Duncan, and people that had gone through the program were having tremendous success at that high level, and it was an exciting expectation, basically, on the team that not only was it possible, but very possible if you did the right things and you worked hard. So I think that is the dynamic that we need to continue to try to create and a culture. I think it's a culture and an environment that you create. College Park has a great culture like that, where when national tournaments come around, there's a very high level of expectation that there's going to be a lot of, you know, a lot of great results from this tournament, and we've put the hard work in, and the mindset and the expectations are there, and good things will happen. I think as you see certain generations of players and in certain countries, that starts happening too. You know, one will have some success, and that pushes the others because they want to stay up with them, and that's the beauty of that kind of dynamic. So the more we can create those kind of cultures and environments and atmospheres, whether it's in a club or throughout an entire country in some international competition, that's where we can kind of let the players push themselves and really create reach some great heights.
Ken, one of my criticisms about the way we approach junior tennis is that we have age delegation. Age determination. It should be age-related, not age-determined. I don't care whether it's 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, but you came through junior tennis just like every American player. I believe that the kids have to jump through the same hoops at age 12, 14, 16, 18, and so on and so on. Many years ago, it seemed logical, I think, that they just, you know, separated the kids by age. It shouldn't be age-determined, I don't believe. I don't know if you're familiar with Dave Fish and Dave Howe. Dave Fish is at Harvard. You know Dave Fish, of course.
Sure, yep. Uh-huh.
But are you familiar with his universal rating system?
Yeah, I am a little bit. I'm not – I haven't I don't know all the details. I know there's the 16 different levels, and it's not age-based. It's level-based, and a way to find people of similar levels and a way to help with development that way with playing with the different levels and similar levels and getting that kind of competition within a community or within a city.
Right, exactly. 1,600 points is the maximum. I think Federer's 15.94 something on the thing. But it's beautiful how you can go on there. It's universal rating, universaltennis.com. But if you go back to August 8th of my show's American Tennis, last August 8th I had Dave Fish on and he went through the whole program, if you reviewers are interested. But what he has put together, Kent, and again, this is a grassroots up. It's a bottom-up program. It's not a top-down. And he has put together this universal rating system with Dave Howe, and basically they're creating tennis co-ops. In other words, in every community, if you're from Greenwood, Indiana, and you want to be a good tennis player, you don't have to go to a tournament in Lafayette or in South Bend because those are the only ones that have points. What you do in that is you can go through this universal rating system, and if you're a 14-year-old young man in Greenwood, Indiana, you can play the 20-year-old girl that just graduated from Indiana University and hasn't played in 2 years, and then you can, by the way, a 40-year-old guy is in the tournament that used to play at number 8 on the team at Ball State, and everybody, it could be a whole hybrid. This is how years ago we used to learn how to play. Kent, when I was growing up at the park there, you had to beat Old George, who was 74. Then you had to beat John the Fireman, then John the Cop, and then you had to play the next guy. And then I remember the day I got to beat Old Ditzenberger, old Coach Paul Ditzenberger, who I put in my book, at the front of my book. But he was 55 years old or something, and the day I beat him, I was in heaven. Now, if I had to play only with the kids that were my age, I'm not saying it would have burnt me out, but I would have always had the wrong edge as far as the appreciation of tennis. So I guess I'm pumping, Dave Fish's program here. Is USTA looking towards this at all? As far as, do they talk about it?
You know, I know that I've seen Dave present to the committee, and I remember in California seeing that, and I don't know where things are right now with it, but I certainly know that they're aware of it and have had discussions, and he's presented at it. So, I think it's a interesting concept, and I think logistically, like you just pointed out, I mean, to have it would simplify some things logistically. But again, it's a little bit like a few of the earlier topics. I'm not an expert on it, and I know there's a lot of things involved with it. But certainly, in theory, there's some very fascinating things about that system that would be very good.
We'll come back there in a second. We've got about 6 or 7 minutes. But Ken, I wanted to ask you what are you guys doing? What message would you like to get out there to people about what we can do in the trenches to help American tennis? And things. Serbia beat us last week. Boy, we put up a gallant fight, but everybody wants us back on top.
Right. No, absolutely. And it's incredibly competitive, and we want to be back on top for sure. I mean, I think the biggest thing is we want to continue to team up and collaborate and work together. We want to continue to. We talked a little bit earlier about the culture and the environment, and try to. We want to be working harder than anybody. We want to have people earned advancement and wanting them, when they get wild cards, to have to play playoffs for them and things like that. So we want to instill in our kids the things that are going to make them tough and be great competitors and help their development out as much as possible. So that's one of the things about these RTC camps that I love so much, again, is just the cooperative nature and getting with working together and getting all hands on deck to try to produce a huge base, a huge wave of upcoming players that technically are sound and they're going to be great competitors and really push each other ultimately as teachers and coaches. That's our goal, I think, is to teach the kids to be great problem solvers, that they'll be pushing each other to get better and give them ownership, give the kids some ownership and let them be able to run with it some, because I think sometimes in our culture we're so structured and so everything's so spelled out and kind of arranged for the kids, that the more they can kind of pack their own bags, enter their own tournaments, you know, set up their own matches, and really to take some of that on themselves, they're going to be better off. And as one coach at one of our RTC says, you know, they need to learn how to row their own boat. And I think as coaches and teachers, that's exciting when the kids do. We help them along that path, but ultimately they need to take that ownership. And I think we don't see quite enough of that. And I think as a parent, as a coach, sometimes the tendency is to try to do more than we probably should for the kids. But there comes that time when they need to, you know, we help them instill the foundation in them and instill certain values, but we also need to give them room to take ownership and run with it. And then that's certainly our hope, that we'll get a big wave of kids that are doing that and pushing each other and reaching new heights, and that we'll have more and more players in the top 100 and get some Grand Slam champions again soon.
Hey, Kent, we've got a caller here on the line, area code 828-266. Are you there? Would you like to ask Kent Kinnear a question or join the show today?
Hey, Chuck, this is Mike Kernodle. How you doing?
Hey, Mike, man, I got to get you on. I thought about it today. You know, I called Kent. I went to Mr. Dependable Reliable, but, you know, I really need you on the show. Kent, this is Mike Kernodle. I'm up at App State, up in North Carolina, one of the – and I don't want to call you a brilliant man. I just want to call you a very good man who is in the trenches. And, Mike, go ahead. You talk to Kent here and, you know, and the listener.
Well, I was just calling in to kind of discuss the what you were talking about a couple of minutes ago with, you know, playing as a young kid or as a beginner, playing a variety of skill sets. And, you know, from a learning perspective, that's actually a very positive learning environment because, you know, the more you have to problem solve when you're playing, the more likely you are to have a transfer over to competition. And I think having to play somebody that, you know, hits strange strokes, slices, classic strokes, you know, that learning environment is a lot more positive than playing the same type of stroke, the same type of player all the time. There was a really interesting article a number of years ago called Jock of the Bays, where they took a look at all of the top players based on this thing called Bayesian theorem. I don't want to get into it too much, but what they did was they looked at a combination of the variety of the game and the athletic ability of the individuals. And obviously, the lower the number, the more likely you were to win. And then they compared players, and they took a look at, like, you know, Federer versus Roddick. You know, Roddick had the athletic ability but didn't have the variety. So, you know, Federer would win. But then they had Fabrice Santoro, who had so much variety to his game, and he used to cause Federer a lot of problems, but the athletic ability of Federer, you know, overcame the obstacle of Santoro's variety. But Santoro would give a lot of players a lot of trouble because he just caused so many problem-solving difficulties. And so I think what Dave is talking about and what you were talking about actually has a lot of positives to it.
Kent?
No, I think that's right. I mean, I think I love, from a coaching standpoint, the whole idea of this whole problem-solving and the kids being able to figure out and face different adversities and as you said, different game styles, is incredibly valuable for the kids as they continue to figure things out. And I couldn't agree more that's such an important part of the development of the player overall.
Yeah, and again, Chuck, you know, I still go to a lot of places, and unfortunately I still see a lot of the lessons being very structured in, you know, like hitting cross courts and then hitting down the lines, and, you know, there's really there's no thinking going on. There's no problem solving. You know, you're grooving the stroke, but you're not preparing for competition. And I'd really like to see a lot more of the academies and a lot more of the, you know, the training centers, and get to doing this. I think it's becoming more prevalent, but, you know, I've been preaching this with some other people for 15 years, and I still go to places that are supposed to be elite training centers, you know, and I see the pros out there hand-feeding balls to elite players for, you know, a long period of time, or doing these drills where the players know exactly where the ball is going to go and exactly where they're supposed to be. and that just does not lend itself towards, you know, competitive excellence. And I think, you know, what Kent's alluding to, I think, is, you know, I think they're trying to do that more and more and more, and I think that's a real positive.
Yeah, I think they are. And, guys, we're about out of time here.
Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He's got the red, white, blue, fine high on the farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his Simpsons. Spend a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. He's just made in America. Made in America. Made in America.
And it's Coach Chuck Creasy with American Tennis. We'd like to thank Kent Kinnear. Mike Cronodal, thanks for coming on the show as well. And I'm going to give you a call. I'm hoping I can get you on here real soon. We really need a whole hour with you. And thanks for your contribution every day of your life. Folks, we want to remind you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. God bless you, and keep working hard on those tennis courts. Thank Kent Kinnear.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.